is in the back of the room. Jake Hunter and Daniel Lutz are here today. Thanks for coming, guys. Appreciate that very much. Where are you from? All right.
Whitaker Middle School.
Great. Whitaker.
Kaiser.
Great. Wonderful. Thank you very much. Hope you enjoy your day at the Capitol. Okay, let's get rocking and rolling here before the cops come and get us. We open a work session on Senate Bill 255. Janet.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 255 was the bill on PIP, personal injury protection benefits, covering situations where an insurer doesn't choose one of the recovery methods there to receive their PIP benefit back from the other insurance company, and the claimant instead goes to court to receive the payment. And this is a method to ensure that the insurer that gets reimbursed pays their share of attorney's fees and costs that were incurred by the claimant. There's a Dash 1 amendment, and it replaces the original bill. The changes are on the back. It specifies that an insurer that does not elect direct reimbursement of benefits may only recover the payments through the lien process or subrogation. And again, this makes them subject to having to pay their portion of the attorney's fees and costs. Steve Morell is here from State Farm.
As you recall, we asked Steve and the trial lawyer folks to work together on just the clarity of the amendment that they agreed to, and I believe this is what we have. Welcome.
Senator Metzger and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Steve Merle. I'm an attorney employed by the Claims Department of State Farm Insurance. This is a process that, again, carried over from last session and deals with personal injury protection coverage, commonly referred to as PIP. That's a coverage that's mandated on a car insurance policy in Oregon that pays for the medical bills of a person who's injured in the automobile accident. When an insurance carrier pays for their insured's medical bills and there's another party at fault, a very important part, both from public policy and to make sure costs come out correctly, is the insurer paying for the person who is not at fault is allowed to recover their money from the person who is at fault to make sure that that allocation of responsibility stays intact. The legislature in the 1970s, when they enacted the PIP statute, allowed three methods of recovery. The first one is direct reimbursement, which this bill changes that statute to make sure you understand what happens when direct reimbursement doesn't occur. But direct reimbursement occurs between insurance companies. The second method of recovery is a lien, where the insurance carrier has an opportunity to assert a lien against the settlement of their insured when it's settled. And in that case, not only does the insurance company receive their money back, but they also share in the proportionate fees and costs that are associated with making that recovery. The third and final method is the what we call subrogation method, where basically if you don't have the first two methods available to you, it's a catch-all provision that allows you to recover your money again. If there's attorney's fees and costs associated with that recovery, the insurer shares in those attorney's fees and costs. What this bill will do is make it clear that you only have those three methods of recovery. There had been a problem in the market with someone taking another section of the PIP Act out of context and claiming they had the ability to make recovery under that section and not pay an attorney fee. What this bill will do is now make it clear you only have those three methods. If an insurer doesn't do direct reimbursement, which in that case is insurer to insurer and there are no fees, then you can only go through 742.536 or 742.538, in which case you will pay your proportionate share of fees and costs. And that makes it clear that will happen now, and that's the intent of the bill. Neil Jackson with the trial lawyers is ill and not able to be here today. I think this accurately reflects our agreement with him. As we talked to the chair prior to this hearing, though, we said that if there's any issues that do develop, they're probably highly technical in nature, but we would be willing to work with him either to pull the bill back or else submit it on the House side for correcting any defects. With that, if there are any questions, I'd be willing to answer.
Thank you. Well, I appreciate you working on that, and our understanding does reflect the agreement, so my desire would just be to go ahead rather than just keep holding that. Any questions at all?
Mr. Chair, does Neil Jackson know about the amendment? Was he sent
it? Yes. Yeah. He knows about the amendment. He hasn't actually seen this piece.
His lobbyist is in the back of the room, and he told me prior to the hearing he faxed it to Neil, and he had seen it before the hearing. So.
Okay. Thank you.
I say, if for any unusual reason, we'd bring it back. I think we need to move ahead. Okay, we have a Dash 1.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
Move the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 255.
Senator Starr has moved the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 255. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
You're looking for another motion?
Yeah.
I would move Senate Bill 255 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr's moved Senate Bill 255 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Okay. Who wants to carry? Anybody want to carry insurance stuff? Anybody excited about insurance stuff? Okay. I'll carry it.
Senator Nelson.
Yeah, I guess Senator Nelson's here. Would you like to carry some?
He's here for 470.
Okay, what we'll do is... okay, I think what we'll do, if it's okay, Senator... I think we'll go ahead and do 466, as this will be short, and then we can have time for 470 without interrupting you. So we'll open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 466. John McCauley, if you want to come forward. Janet, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 466 would allow agricultural cooperatives to have directors on their governing boards who are not members or representative of members of the cooperative. But it would require that a cooperative have specific authority adopted in their bylaws in order to meet, in order to elect non-member directors. The bill is at the request of the Agricultural Cooperative Council of Oregon. There is a -1 amendment that was just clarifying what was unclear in the original drafting and does not change the substance of the intent or the intent of the measure. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Janet. Mr. McCauley, welcome.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Members of the committee, my name is John McCauley, representing the Agriculture Cooperative Council of Oregon, and I hope the shortness of this is going to be reflected in a positive vote because we're here to support Senate Bill 466. As the committee staff has outlined, this is a bill that would authorize the cooperative, if the members so chose to amend their bylaws, to have a non-member director. And this only applies to agriculture cooperatives, so the companies I represent are companies like Tillamook Cheese, Norpac Foods, Pendleton Grain Growers, Wilco Farmers, and others in the state. And there's some interest in our membership of trying to bring expertise to a boardroom that doesn't exist now within the homogeneous membership of the cooperative, which are all farmers. There may be that expertise there, but unlike say an electric or telephone cooperative that serves an entire area where the consumers may indeed have that expertise to serve on a board, in an agricultural cooperative, that isn't necessarily the case. So we're seeking this legislation to make it permissive for cooperative membership to change their bylaws to permit a non-member to serve on the board. In addition, I should tell you that several other states have adopted this type of approach. Washington and California specifically allow this. There is a national move afoot to have a model cooperative law for the states to look at, and that model law includes provisions for non-member directors. So we believe it's in keeping with the trend that's going. But again, I emphasize that it is member-driven. The members have to decide they want to do this, and of course, then they have to elect the director, so it remains in the hands of the members. And so we commend it to you for your yes vote as a positive way to provide this kind of flexibility to agriculture cooperatives.
Thank you, Mr. McCauley. Any questions by the committee? Senator George.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. John, thank you so much. I apologize for not doing my background on this particular bill, but here's my issue. I'm very supportive of agricultural cooperatives. My family's belonged to a number of different times, but as we've seen, agricultural cooperatives have a number of financial advantages over traditional food processors and agricultural service providers. In California, we just saw Diamond Walnut. Once they went to this kind of board, then went back into the private sector. So they got pulled out of the cooperative and they went through a private equity firm and were purchased by the private sector, which had a huge impact on their members. I guess I'm a little concerned with the financial advantages that agricultural cooperatives have now, and then with private equity firms with what they're doing. It seems like I'm a little concerned about the ramifications of this bill are much bigger. if you see what I'm saying.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator George, I'm not sure of all of the financial advantages you're talking about. There are cooperatives, I guess, who would argue the other way, that they are at a disadvantage because they have limitations on the ability to raise capital, and that drives the decisions that you're talking about that occurred in the Diamond Walnut situation. Honestly, I don't see that happening with this change that we're talking about here. I think that the membership having control over those bylaws makes it difficult to reach that end with a large company like Diamond Walnut. I think the cooperatives in the state of Oregon are of such nature that it doesn't lend themselves to that type of transition that occurred there.
Good. Mr. Chair, thank you. As I read the bill, maybe I'm just reading it wrong. Is there a limitation on the percentage of directors that can be non-members? I didn't see that in the bill. Maybe
yeah,
I'm just
Mr. Chair, Senator George, no, that is again left up to the membership. It has to be authorized in the bylaws, and the membership has to have control over changing the bylaws to start with, and then secondly determining who they're going to vote for to serve on the board.
Okay.
Other questions? Anybody else wish to testify in Senate Bill 466?
I have one little question.
Yes.
How does this cooperatives compare to the Cattlemen Association and the relationships they have with the dairy?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator Moore.
Are they subsets or is that entirely different?
There is only a relationship because some of the members of an association may also be a member of a cooperative. A cooperative is an actual business entity that attempts to make a profit that is returned to the members. The members benefit from their membership in the cooperative by being able to do things together that they can't do in business separately.
Now I understand what a cooperative is. All right.
Okay. Thank you very much. Okay. Thank you, Mr. McCullough.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
It's going to be a brief recess. Transportation Committee, and we'll close public hearing on Senate Bill 466 for now. And we will open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 470. Janet.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 470 is sponsored by Senator Monis Anderson and Senator Nelson at the request of the Oregon Telecommunications Coordinating Council. It would require the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department to establish a grant program to promote expanding a self-sustaining internet exchanges to all areas of the state, as well as improving internet capacity, accessibility, and performance. The main part of the bill is allocating $1 million to the department for the program beginning July 1st, 2007. And also directs the department to establish the process for both submitting applications and for evaluating and approving projects under the funding. It specifies that any person or public body may apply for the grant. Mr. Chair, the bill has a subsequent referral to the Ways and Means Committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Janet. Senator Nelson, Mr. Connectivity himself. Oh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the opportunity to speak. My name is David Nelson, State Senator, representing Senate District 29 in Northeast Oregon. I've been in my legislative career actively involved in telecommunications, and the Oregon Telecommunications Coordinating Council is one of the outgrowths of that involvement. That's a group of volunteer folks, a lot of successful businessmen, a lot of interested people from various walks of life that are volunteering their time. This is an unpaid group, but they have a think tank and they come, they meet on a pretty regular basis during the year, and they come up with these ideas. And so, what 470 is doing? It's we're talking about the internet and how the Oregon economy depends upon the internet and how everybody depends upon it, and how the internet develops in Oregon will influence our opportunities in a global economy. The Internet is shaped by competitive forces, not under control of any government. That's why we like it. But we can do things to stimulate more private sector Internet investment and recruitment for more Internet-intensive business. And, you know, if you go back to Senate Bill 622 in 1999, the fact it was a public-private partnership where the state actually gave up some regulatory control over Quest in order to obtain $120 million to help build the infrastructure. So it's a the whole thrust, I think, of this of Oregon Telecommunication Coordinating Council is to make the state better, make greater access, improve economic development, improve the life of Oregonians. This is a proposal to provide incentives to improve the Internet in Oregon, to make Oregon more competitive in the age of Internet, and I think you're going to be quite delighted with the testimony that you're going to receive today. There's a couple of folks that are members of the Oregon Telecommunications Coordinating Council who are successful businessmen who are here with this proposal, and I would ask that the committee entertain their testimony.
Okay. Thank you, Senator. Any questions for Senator Nelson? Senator Starr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much for bringing this bill, Senator Nelson. The question I have is, are there any protections in this bill for grants that would go to public entities, cities, particularly? You mentioned having the private sector do this, and that's the perspective that I have, and I'm concerned that you have local governments that might want to get into this business. Is there a prohibition against grants going to, you know, a local city that may want to provide Internet service?
I don't know that question or answer that question, so I think you probably better talk with the folks who have drafted this bill who came up with the study behind it.
But from your perspective, that's not, I mean, you're more interested in driving private investment.
Yes.
Not having a public entity be in competition with the private sector.
I always think it's like, you know, legislators wanting to be lobbyists, they usually do a very poor job. I think cities and counties do a very poor job of providing Internet connectivity. They never make money at it. So, my idea, and I think you'll hear from these private businessmen, that, you know, they're looking at the fact, let's drive this by private industry.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator. And we'll get testimony on this in a second, but on page 2, line 16, it does say public body would be eligible for grants under this bill. But, of course, you know, this is a work in progress, and we've just begun the work. So,
you expected me to read the bill?
Thank you. Okay.
Clearly, I didn't.
Ask Edwin Parker, Mike Dewey, and Chris Tamarin to come forward, please.
Oh, you guys come here. I was going to run it for you.
Welcome.
Thank you.
I think we'll have Mr. Parker, if you'd maybe go first.
Chair Metzger, committee members. I appreciate if we could turn on the slide.
There we go. We can dim the lights here in a moment.
My name is Ed Parker. I'm a telecommunications consultant who lives in Glen Eden Beach. In prior lives, I was a professor of communication at Stanford University and later a communications company executive in Silicon Valley. Today, I'm here as a member of the Oregon Telecommunications Coordinating Council, on whose behalf Senate Bill 470 was introduced. I want to say for the record that I don't have a client for this exercise. I'm doing this as a volunteer because I love this great state of Oregon and want to do what I can to help improve it. What I'd like to do today is take you on a brief tour of the invisible underpinnings of the Internet. And since this may be the first time that any of you have been on such a tour, I'd really appreciate it if you'd interrupt with questions if you see or hear anything that isn't clear. I'd like to start with the reason why we want to do it. The thumbnail capsule of the Oregon economy is the past was resource-based, the present is high-tech manufacturing, and the biggest future opportunity is internet businesses, the Googles and the other internet businesses. That's not to say that those are going to replace the past or the present, but that's our biggest growth opportunity for the economy. But more importantly, all businesses need the internet, whether they're family farms, manufacturing companies, small businesses need to connect with their customers and their suppliers through the internet. It's amazing. In the past 10 years, since the first World Wide Web browser was introduced, the internet has just transformed how we do business. So let me talk about what the internet is. It's not a network. It's a network of many, many networks that are all interconnected. Nobody controls it. Nobody regulates it. It's shaped entirely by private sector decisions, and we wouldn't have it any other way. That's the way we like it. The major West Coast connection points where the major internet backbone providers, the major internet providers interconnect, are in the Seattle area, the San Francisco Bay Area, and Southern California, none in Oregon. Well, does location really matter? I used to say, that if you have good broadband access, you can live and work anywhere, and that's why I moved to Glen Eden Beach in the first place. And that's still true if all you're using the internet for is email or looking up the information on web pages. But if you're a healthcare provider that needs higher quality real-time communications for video conference, for patient consultation, for continuing education for physicians, or if you're a business trying to make money selling through the internet, business websites need to be close to their customers. And close isn't really measured in miles. Once you're on a straight run of fiber optic cable, it goes at about the speed of light, and so a few miles here and there don't make any difference. What makes a difference in closeness to customers is how many stops there are along the way. And in Oregon, some people have characterized it as Oregon is living like a slum underneath the freeway with no on-ramps, because the internet on-ramps are in Seattle and San Francisco. We have about a dozen transpacific fiber optic cables that come ashore in Oregon. Only one splits out its traffic in Oregon. The rest all go on to Seattle or Northern California before you're able to get on those. I think of them as express trains. And Oregon is like, we have to be on a little commuter train that takes us to either San Francisco or Seattle before we can get on the through train, the express train that gets us to the rest of the world. And that's why Nike hosts its websites in California. That's probably why Oregon.gov is hosted in Texas instead of in Oregon. Now, whether we get major connection points in Oregon or not is entirely up to the private sector, and volume of business matters. If there's enough business, they'll connect here, and if there isn't enough business, they won't. It's that simple. But as a result of that, the rich tend to get richer, and that happens to be Washington and California. So we need a larger critical mass in Oregon in order to make it worthwhile for the major internet providers to interconnect here instead of elsewhere. We do have several advantages. We have excellent statewide infrastructure. We have good fiber optic capacity throughout the state. We're not talking about we need more fiber. We're talking about we need more traffic connections and ways to get onto the fiber for the internet. We've got the most trans-Pacific cable landings on the West Coast. When you're building major hosting facilities for hosting internet sites, the cost of power is a major factor. and we have low power costs. We have desirable lower cost locations than the locations in California and Washington that are becoming congested. And we already have two internet exchanges in Oregon, one in Portland and one in Eugene. We do have some internet disadvantages. We have what I'm calling long tail circuits to the internet backbone. And let me just give an example. If you're a residential customer of DSL broadband in Eugene and want to connect to the University of Oregon in Eugene, it turns out the internet service provider for that customer, presumably Quest DSL, is located in Seattle, so the traffic goes up first to Seattle. The University of Oregon's connection to the internet happens to be in San Jose, California. And so the traffic to get across the street in Eugene goes through 17 or 18 different traffic interconnection points, each one potentially slowing down and causing quality problems, goes through San Jose and Seattle before it gets across the street. There are better ways to do it and lower cost ways to do it. Now, Oregon has a small population relative to California and Washington, so we're never going to have enough consumer demand to outcompete Washington and Oregon for consumer demand for internet services. And what market power we have is diffused. Every organization, government, deals with getting to the internet in a different way. And so, as I said, we host in Texas and California. Each has its own way of getting to the internet backbone out of state.
Mr. Parker, or Mr. Chair?
Yes. Yeah.
When you have to go all the way from Eugene on one side of the street up to Seattle and then back, are you saying that if we had a server, is that what you call it, server in Oregon, that we would be cutting down on time? Is that what you're talking about?
I think if you're only doing email and looking up web pages and you don't mind if it's occasionally slow downloading, then it really doesn't matter that it takes such a long route. But if you're doing any real-time application, like video conferencing, and I've occasionally done video conferencing to Salem from Glen Eden Beach, and sometimes the quality isn't very good, and it's because of the quality of the internet in between.
Okay.
So it doesn't really matter for email, but for the future real-time applications and for the major business applications, it really does make a difference. And there is indeed in Eugene an internet exchange, but a lot of the internet service providers don't connect at that exchange. And if they connected at that exchange, there might be a way that they could save some money, perhaps, and we'll come to that later. So the main disadvantage is cost, and I think there's a way we can do something about that. So what would we like to have happen? We'd like to connect Oregon traffic in Oregon so it improves the quality for real-time applications that will become more and more important as an internet application in the future. We'd like to improve Oregon's connections to the rest of the internet so that this Oregon is a desirable place for web-based businesses to grow and to relocate. And we'd like to extend the benefits of good internet statewide so that they're not just in the upper Willamette Valley. So what's the opportunity for Oregon? Well, the opportunity is to reduce Oregon internet costs. And on the next slide, I'll talk a little bit how we can reduce those costs. Improve Oregon internet quality. Create more internet exchanges. We currently have an internet exchange in Portland in the Pittock building. one in Eugene. It would be nice if we had one in southern Oregon, in the Medford area somewhere perhaps, and one in central eastern Oregon, so that internet traffic can exchange locally and interconnect with others in Oregon. So we'd like to interconnect those exchanges. We'd like to build on the open source software initiatives in Oregon. A lot of open source software companies are grown here, start here, and then end up moving out of state because ultimately, since they sell their product through the internet, they want to be close to the express lines on the internet and not being on a long commuter run to get to the internet. And since we are the gateway to the Pacific Basin, we have the opportunity to grow enough aggregate business to make incentives for those trans-Pacific cables to break out their traffic here so that we can get packets on and off those trans-Pacific communication routes. Well, how can we accomplish that? We can strengthen the Oregon Internet exchanges basically by aggregating the demand at those exchanges. We can make the Internet service providers in Oregon that have fewer costs. For example, Internet service providers have to buy their high bandwidth pipes to get to the Internet backbone. The amount of capacity that they need to get to the Internet backbone from Oregon is going to be less if they hand off the Oregon traffic in Oregon. Now, since if they have enough pipes to handle all the traffic immediately, it's not going to be an immediate saving, but it may delay the time when they have to expand the capacity. Secondly, if they interconnect at common aggregation points, they may be able to pool their buying power and collectively buy a much larger pipe to the Internet, where the cost per bit is much less if they buy a larger pipe. So if we strengthen the Oregon Internet exchanges, we may do a favor to Oregon businesses and the Internet service providers. There's nothing here in this bill that allows anybody to start a new business to compete with the Internet service providers or the telecommunication carriers. Now, that's not the intent. We're just trying to improve the connectivity amongst the providers that we already have. We'd like to stimulate web hosting business. You know, we'd like Oregon to be a good state in which the Oregon.gov website can live in Oregon instead of in Texas. But we'd like it to be a good place for commercial businesses to host their websites.
Can I interrupt just for a quick second? I just want to make it clear, to me anyway. You've talked about the quality of the Internet as it passes through this and why things are therefore dislocated from our area and the long route that some things take. Are you saying that the Oregon.gov website, that it's out of state because it has to be, because it would not have the same quality at either Eugene or Portland if it was hosted here?
I don't know the reason. It may be they got a better price out of state, right, and it costs less money.
Right.
And so that if we can have some incentives to create a cost-effective web hosting arrangement in Oregon, that may be a good thing. Part of the issue is economy of scale. In order to have the lowest cost, you need the large volume. And if we don't work at trying to aggregate a lot of volume together, we may never get up to the critical mass where we have the cost-effective web hosting process.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Morrison.
So is that why Qwest hasn't, the main reason they haven't have any Internet exchanges here in the state of Oregon, just because of a price?
I can't speak for Qwest, but
we can ask in a moment after his presentation. we will ask somebody from Qwest.
Okay, I have some questions on how
but,
this
but
works.
I believe that at least for their residential broadband traffic, they're not their own ISP. I believe they use MSN out of Seattle, and so I think the traffic all goes up there first.
Just to follow up here, I mean, when we say private, what would prevent Questrom accessing these funds also to set up internet exchanges?
No reason whatsoever.
That's
no,
okay.
In fact, you know, I think Quest traffic already runs through the Pittock building where the NWACS, the Northwest Access Exchange, is located, and they probably could interconnect there if they chose.
Thank you.
The intent is not to compete with the private sector, but somehow get the private sector cooperating and interconnecting. And if we need some incentives to make it happen, great. But mostly, our plan is to not force or advocate or require anybody to do anything that their business plans tell them isn't in their best interests. We just like to persuade carriers that maybe they can improve service to their customers and potentially reduce costs, and at the same time do good things for the state of Oregon. And LS Networks, for example, has listened to this presentation, or the precursor of it, and they changed their routing tables for their internet access in Oregon and greatly improved the access times and connection times on their internet routing. And they did that voluntarily because they thought it was a good thing. I think the other carriers haven't addressed it yet because it's not yet a problem. We're talking future opportunity here, not fixing a past problem. And in order to leverage enough demand to get us up to a critical mass, I think we need to combine our government purchasing power, our education purchasing power, and our healthcare purchasing power in this state. Healthcare is particularly important because the quality of the current internet in Oregon is unsuitable for healthcare applications, and we need to improve, you know, for healthcare. And if we can get healthcare dollars for healthcare networks in this state, not to build new networks, but to pay for better connectivity on the networks we have, you know, I think that would be a good thing. But mostly it's going to be the private sector that's going to drive this, not something that can be done here in Salem. So our legislative proposals on this topic are twofold. The first one was basically just a policy resolution supporting the concept. That's not being heard here today. But that was because we think it would be a serious mistake for the government to mandate anything. The internet is moving too fast. It's the time scales are just wrong. The internet moves quickly and government regulations move slowly, and we don't want government regulation that would be more likely to have unintended consequences and harm more than help.
Mr. Chair.
We're kind of dial up, in other words. We're dial up. Senator Montes Anderson.
Yes, we passed that resolution out of committee this morning. It's too bad they couldn't have been together in the same committee, but the resolution was passed out of committee today.
Well, thank you. That's
public
good news.
Affairs.
Thank you. And the main focus of Senate Bill 470 is basically to provide grant funds to strengthen internet exchanges in Oregon, hopefully, you know, instead of just having the two exchanges we have, we would have four, and hopefully they can be upgraded to handle the additional capacity that they we hope this initiative will produce, and facilitate increased web hosting in the state of Oregon. So as I said, the benefits to internet providers are to reduce their costs, and secondly, to improve the quality for their customers. If there are fewer traffic stops on their internet routes, there's less delay, then less jitter, which is the problem you see on some of the internet video conferences we have. The benefits to Oregon businesses: improved web hosting opportunities, improving the telecommunications infrastructure, not building new infrastructure, but improving its connectivity. moving Oregon businesses closer to their Oregon customers and closer to their internet customers in other parts of the world, and making it easier to keep the Oregon software businesses in Oregon. So in conclusion, I say we can improve internet connectivity, we can improve internet quality, we can create an Oregon internet business cluster, and we can expand the internet opportunity in Oregon statewide. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I have one question, and we'll go to the committee and go to our other guests. This bill seeks to do that by providing dollars for OECDD to use for grants. Now, that's one approach. Another approach can be used, tax policy, regulatory policy. There's other ways in which incentives can be provided. I would just be curious as to for private carriers to make investments they might not otherwise make. 622 was an example of that. I would be interested in your perspective of why this would be the best approach to provide that ramp up of this type of connectivity.
Chair Metzger, we discussed those potential alternatives in our Oregon Telecommunications Coordinating Council, and we did spend quite a bit of time discussing with the industry representatives on on our council the possibility of incentives, of tax incentives, and we couldn't get a lot of traction for that that approach. And I think an incentive through grant funds, hopefully as a one-time startup, get us over the hump to critical mass, may be better than changing tax policy, which would be changed for a longer period. But it's not the only way, and if we're happy to get there any way we can. The goal is to improve the economy of the state of Oregon.
Thank you very much. Questions for this panelist? Next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mike Dewey, Oregon Cable Telecommunications Association. And I appreciate the context of the conversation we've had so far in the sense of the private companies being involved. I had marked down neutral with amendments if this bill goes forward. I think it's a little too...
Actually, you marked down against with amendments.
I meant to say neutral. Okay. I apologize.
You have moved to neutral, let the record show, since
net
with
neutrality.
Amendments. Since, net neutrality.
Yeah.
So okay. Thank you,
Senator. I'm
not sure we want to go there.
But, I'll make two observations. First, I'd like to have the bill amended to have the $1 million go to SMART first, and then... if we are successful here, we'll have more internet companies, arguably, and they'll be centrally assessed, and that'll be a negative, as we can talk about.
Lobbying another bill, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, I know.
I'm here lobbying a different bill.
I understand that.
Okay, so having said that, I think the reason I say amendments, I believe the bill is a little too broad in terms of what the intent is for connectivity, and we can always use... for the cable operators that provide high-speed data services connectivity. We have our own private networks, but obviously we've got to pass off our data at some point in time, depending on where the end user is. I was concerned, and I appreciated Senator Starr's comment about the publics in this business, and we want to get away, I think, from competing with the private market. Ashland did that. They've got a $15 million debt. And as some of you know, they're now taking money out of their other departments to pay for their debt. They've got out of the video business. They're still in the data business, notwithstanding competing with the private entity. So I think the language needs to be modified to make it more specific as to what the intent is. And I think we can then support that because we could, if the money were allocated, companies or even cable companies could perhaps apply for this. And so we do appreciate that aspect from the private side. As I guess a plug, cable companies are now providing service to small businesses in communities in terms of that's an area where they think there's a tremendous market. But you have to have high speeds and you have to have reliability. And so this is a kind of bill that could get us there with the right kind of amendments. There are some rural university service funds through USDA that are also available, low-cost loans, albeit this is a grant, if you will, I guess, free money. So with that, Mr. Chair, if the bill moves forward, we'd like to see it perhaps modified just to get the context of if it's web hosting. We talked about connectivity and the like, and that concerns me a little bit as to the kind of applications the department may get. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for Mr. Dewey? Yes, Senator.
So you're saying, when you say web hosting, I'm still learning the terminology here, like video conferencing. I mean, it's key, at least in the healthcare industry, to have better connectivity amongst the healthcare industry. And so we will be able to have teleconferences. So,
well, Mr. Chair and Senator, I don't know necessarily what type of projects may come forward. There may need to be some sort of priority for the project, so companies who might apply for these funds would know what that means. It may be that it's not necessarily video conferencing per se, but that would be an attribute by having more advanced networks or networks, if you will, servers that are in Oregon that can be utilized. Yeah. So it's really the end product would be video conferencing, but it's the infrastructure that gets you there, and it may be that by virtue of getting a grant, you can demonstrate that these are, if you will, the end products that are going to make us more successful in Oregon.
Questions? Welcome.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Christopher Tamron with the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department, OECDD for short. I appreciate the opportunity to join you this afternoon on behalf of the department to provide testimony regarding Senate Bill 470. As we've heard, this bill proposes to establish a grant program to be administered by OECDD to promote the expansion and accessibility of Oregon's internet exchanges and web hosting facilities. There's a widely held view that a continuously improving telecommunications infrastructure is vital to Oregon's economic future, both for urban and rural areas, and that this infrastructure is necessary to support ongoing economic development and workforce development initiatives for Oregon to effectively compete in a global economy. It's been OECD's DD's experience that telecommunications is an increasingly important element of infrastructure and contributes directly to Oregon's ability to retain, expand, and attract businesses, as well as promote a favorable investment climate, create jobs, and improve the national and global competitiveness of Oregon's companies. OECDD would view programs such as the one proposed here in SB 470 as consistent with its mission to advance Oregon's economy. Thank you for the opportunity to appear before you, and I hope I'll be able to answer any questions you might have.
Okay, thank you. I have a question for Mr. Dewey. You talked about looking for amendments to, you said the bill was too broad and you wanted to be more specific, but you were less specific about what your specificity was. If you could help me get an understanding of what type of language you are referring to, and so we have some guidelines of what you're asking for, so if there's other people have comments on that, we can get it.
I'm happy to do that. I look at the bill, and improving Oregon internet connectivity is fairly broad. That could be at the residential level. It just seems to me that the coordinating council has a goal in mind. It's going to be maybe two or three sentences as to exactly what we want to do, and that's where I would be. If it's web hosting, that can be, and those are terms I understand, and I think would be appropriate. So I'm happy to work on some amendments. I just my concern is that a public entity is going to come in, say we are underserved, albeit there's a private competitor in the marketplace, and they could capture some of the dollars. And I have a concern that that could happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you. So, and I'll ask the other two gentlemen here, if among those amendments it did delete the public entity mm-hmm. as a possibility, what would your reactions be to that? If they were out of the picture, is that good, bad, from your perspective?
Now, Mr. Chair, committee members, from the perspective of the Oregon Telecommunications Coordinating Council, there was absolutely no intent here of funding any any entity to compete with a cable company, an ISP, or to help anybody provide internet service to anybody. So I think we should make it clear that that's not what this bill is about. What we're trying to do is create the connectivity so that Charter Cable and Comcast Cable and Quest and CenturyTel and all the other providers of internet services in the state can interconnect in Oregon to hand off their traffic locally. And sometimes that interconnection point where all the carriers can come together in a neutral point may not be one of those carriers' facilities. It may be a neutral facility because it may be easier for them to meet in a neutral place. You know, for example, the Northwest Access Exchange, located in Portland, is a nonprofit entity. It's a neutral meeting point where the carriers meet. And I would hate for this bill to make it impossible for NWACS as a nonprofit to be able to apply for facilities to upgrade its exchange capability, because we need a place where all these competitors interconnect. And so that's the intent. But I think the bill could be made clear to, I don't think there's a difference of goal or opinion.
No, not at all.
And the bill was not detailed because we thought it would probably be preferable to have the details go into the OECDD rulemaking. But if it's helpful to clarify up front and put some of those more detailed issues right in the bill itself, I don't see that that's a problem.
Mr. Tamer, what's your opinion on the public body issue?
Say, speaking for the department that's designated as the agency that would administer the program, the department's position would be we would serve any applicants that the legislature would define as eligible.
That's a proper response, isn't it? Good. You probably will not get your hand slapped when you go back. Any other questions for this panel? Thank you very much. Ms. Lang, would you please come forward to see if maybe shed some light on the question posed by Senator Mata Sanderson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Jenny Lang, and I represent Quest. I'm not sure I can answer it directly. These are issues that are highly technical, and we have people in our company that are in fact working on a paper that we would hope to work with ORTCC at their panel, where they're going to be talking about this very topic next week. And so what I can tell you about what we do in this area is that Quest, among other large companies, including AT&T, UUNet, Sprint, Level 3, Cogent, and others, we are companies that own our own backbone facilities. And as such, we interconnect with those other companies and others for the purpose of exchanging internet traffic. We maintain over 30 peering arrangements with both domestic and international telecommunications network carriers. The internet is, in fact, a network of networks, just like we've all been told for a decade or so now. In order to make those arrangements, we evaluate on an ongoing basis with the help of a formal committee made up of members of our company and others who are, which is chaired by a senior networking engineer, to decide whether the traffic, the applications, the financial considerations, and all of the rest of the elements that go into decisions that are not million-dollar decisions or parts of a million-dollar decision, but multi-million-dollar decisions. And that's why if I'd gotten here in time for the sign-up sheet, I would have said neutral on this bill for the moment. But what I believe is that with Senate Bill 470, we're a little bit premature. I think that the discussion that is going to occur with the panel at the council meeting next week is a starting point, really, rather than something that should be occurring after discussion of this kind of a bill today. I think we need to have considerably more discussion about the details of it, of exactly what these kinds of grants would do for what kinds of companies, for what kinds of expected outcomes, and really know a little bit more about what we're asking to do here. So if you have questions, I will try my best to respond to them, but I'm over my head a bit on the technical side of this issue.
You're in good company then.
Senator Morris, any?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. ORTCC has been meeting for years and has always invited Quest and Sprint and all of those at the table, and they have not been there. They came a couple of times and then have not had really any interest. So it's too bad that Quest wasn't at the table during this whole years-long meetings that they have. And that's what I have to say at this point, because they have been spending a lot of time, and Quest has been invited to the table, and they haven't been there.
Mr. Chair and Senator Montesanishin, I would agree that I am not able to attend every meeting. I am not a member of the council, and I do get the minutes and the agendas, and I do try to be a participant as I can. The fact is that we are trying to pull together information to be part of the panel discussion for the meeting next week on these issues. So if they have had other panels or other formal presentations or work on this particular topic, I apologize for not having been part of that, but I do try to participate when I can.
Any questions? Okay, anybody else wish to testify at this time on Senate Bill 470?
Chairman Metzger, senators, my name for the record is Rich Bader. I'm the president and CEO of Easy Street Online Services, an internet service provider and data center operator in Beaverton, Oregon. By way of background, I was recruited to Oregon by Intel in 1978, worked there for 12 glorious years. My family is here, married a native Oregonian. And I've gotten to see many of your parts of Oregon from the saddle of a bicycle, as I participated in Six Cycle Oregons and gotten to know this great state. I am also on the board of directors and executive committee of the Software Association of Oregon, and who recently determined through an industry study funded in part by government money that we pay almost $3 billion in payroll and contribute almost $1 million in taxes to the state of Oregon, and that this initiative is going to help fuel the economic development in part from software and other companies in the state. I'm also on the board of the Open Technology Business Center, an incubator, also headquartered in Beaverton. Makes it a little convenient for me, but it's a statewide initiative to help create more software companies here. And I'm on the board of the Oregon Growth Account, which, as you know, directs state lottery funds in order to stimulate economic development. It's a pleasure to be here to testify. I am in complete and 1,000% favor of this initiative and bill. It is one of the rare times that I have seen many competing elements in the state of Oregon come together in order to raise a barn that will help us all and help stimulate economic growth. I was in the fine town of Welch's, Oregon, just over the weekend on a board retreat with the Software Association, meeting with colleagues from companies like Intel and HP, who, when they heard about the Internet Forest Initiative and Senate Bill 470, were enthusiastic in their support about it, and I hope to be able to bring more of their contributions to this effort. I have seen our higher education institutions, which have something of a reputation for staking out their own territory, be very cooperative in terms of pursuing how do we cooperate in the spirit of the Internet to help make a greater good of what it is that we already have. And it is the money that will come from this grant program that will be simply a soup starter that will encourage public institutions like the schools, private industry like myself and other members of the community to pool together. I think this is a huge leverageable opportunity that you will see investments in internet's in Oregon's internet infrastructure go far beyond the $1 million that are being proposed for this effort. We have seen initiatives like the New Oregon Health Network Initiative being sponsored by the Telehealth Alliance of Oregon, already presuming some of the benefits and values that will come from this initiative in terms of how they will build out a network that will deliver telehealth benefits to residents of everywhere around the state. So in many ways, this is something of a natural act in the industry. We are asking for cooperation from entities that compete with each other. My relationship with Quest, I'm a major customer of Quest. I compete with Quest. I'm a major customer of some of the other telecommunication companies in Oregon. I compete with them as well. But it is the spirit of the Internet, and it is the spirit of economic growth and development that the government can help catalyze those efforts. And in fact, you're finding that people are coming together to discuss these things that wouldn't have been discussed otherwise. I'm very satisfied to hear about that. I have two comments about some of the conversations come on before in terms of the wording restricting government participation in the programs. I am in agreement with the representative from the cable industry. These monies are not designed to help government get in and compete with the private sector. As we shape the wording of the bill, I would offer caution about wording it in such a way that would restrict our higher education or public school institutions from being eligible for the funding. There are some elements of this program that I'm expecting we'll see Portland State University, Oregon State University, perhaps Portland Public Schools participate in the program, and I wouldn't want them to be excluded from participating in this in some way. Secondly, I'd also like to address the issue of timing, whether this is the appropriate time to pass this bill. In my opinion, the time is right now. This February 22nd ORTCC meeting is a significant event, and if we can have some word of support from the Senate at this time about their interest in moving this proposal forward, it will act as a very strong catalyst to make these forces begin to come together. As you've heard, ORTCC has been meeting about this topic for at least a year. This is a long emerging initiative. I've personally participated in a number of these meetings, and I'm very encouraged to see all the parties in the state come together. So thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I'll be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you very much. Questions? Senator Starr.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Bader, for being here. I appreciate it. Appreciate your testimony. $1 million. In the Internet world, that doesn't seem like a lot of money. And yet, you know, you talked about a significant amount of excitement in the area that you work with every day and your colleagues that work in this area every day. Can $1 million really make that much difference when we're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars of infrastructure really and billions in a multi-billion dollar industries?
Yes, Chairman Metzger, Senator, thank you for the question. $1 million is not a lot of money. You're right. Easy Street invested $1.5 million just last year to expand our facilities in Oregon in order to build a more expanded data center and do this kind of thing. So $1 million to us even would be relatively small. It's the symbolism of having our government, our state government, say this is important enough to put some money behind. And we would be delighted to hear that there is more money available to do this kind of thing. But I do believe that you'll find significant leverage that will come from a mere $1 million. that will be leveraged in private sector investments. And so in part, it's the symbolism of your support and some money that will help, I think, some of the higher ed institutions where some of the programs at OSU, for example, their open source lab is having difficulty with funding. And if they got another $50,000 or $100,000 out of the grant, it would make a significant difference for them, and that I expect to see the private sector contribute millions of dollars more to this effort over a period of time. If you said more money, we would not refuse it. Thank you for that consideration.
But a follow-up on that.
Senator Marsack.
You said Oregon State University?
Yes, Senator.
But they're a public entity, so they wouldn't be eligible for this.
That's why, Chairman, Senator, when I was addressing the issue of wording, I do not want government entities to get into competition with the private sector in this space. But I do believe that in order to make our program succeed, we need the participation of our higher education institutions and perhaps K-12. And in that way, I would not want to exclude them from the opportunity of participating in grants. Their participation would not be to offer services that are competitive with what it is that the private sector is doing, but in fact would help create the demand. That's what this program is largely about. If we can stimulate more usage of the Internet in the state of Oregon, then all the rational economic factors will grow our infrastructure, give us bigger pipes, lower the prices, give us better quality, and so forth. The catalyst that we need is how do we create more demand? Some of that demand comes from our private sector organizations. The state government, city and regional government, and higher education institutions are some of the largest users of Internet in the state, and having them be able to participate and cooperate and share in the benefits of this exercise is extraordinarily important. So providing them with funding, maybe we need to address the wording in some other way, but I would not want to exclude higher ed or public education from participating in the program. I'm not anticipating any of them are going to propose becoming competitors with the private sector through this program.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Senator Starr just looked up the definition that was in the original draft, and it is the broad sense. But certainly there are other definitions that include higher ed as public entities without everything else.
Yes.
And that could be done, yeah.
And we could
yeah.
We could specify
that.
Higher, you know, universities or...
That question, Senator Miles Anderson, because you are a chief co-sponsor of this bill, Senator Nelson. This bill will go to Ways and Means, and as you know, we try to do the best we can to define the policy so that they don't define the policy, they define the funding. And we've had a couple of comments, for the most part, very supportive of this, but just a couple of questions of tweaking, making sure what is our mission, what's the purpose, maybe an outcome, I think language somewhere I think would be valuable. And then the public body issue vis-a-vis public education opportunities, not eliminating those, but making that more specific as not as competitors, but as facilitators to be eligible. Is this, are you comfortable with that kind of a direction?
Very, because that was just an oversight, I think, on ours. We didn't pick that up at all.
Well, we all know how the drafting, their first
steps. Yeah, we should have been working, closer with Quest and the cable companies, because they just we didn't get it to them to review before we brought it here, so that was our fault.
Well, what I would ask to do then is, and again, it's just our, as we are all involved, and we know how things are moving, we want to get good stuff going. We can't have a lot of time, but we don't want to just send something down and then try to have them fix something there. So I would ask that if you and Janet, if you would work with Janet on. So, within a very narrow scope, some of the issues that we talked about today in terms of clarity, defining the public body issue narrowed down to more of higher ed as facilitators, not public bodies as providers. And I think, the issue of outcomes, I think, is always very, very important, whether that's a report or whatever, just to specify we want to know how this stuff is working. If we can get those amendments, what we would do then is bring the bill back, and hopefully, if it be the will of the committee, we would pass it down to Ways and Means with the language that we would prefer, and let it go from there.
Chairman Metzger, Senators, thank you very much for your time and consideration of this.
Thank you very much for your insight. I'll thank all of you.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
I have a question.
Yes,
probably for Janet. As it relates to Section 2, Paragraph 3, In the sub A, it mentions the West Side Lottery bonds.
Mm-hmm.
They're not proposing to. They're just basically saying West Side Lottery bonds are take precedence
yes.
over the $1 million for this program.
Yes.
Okay.
And they're up in 2010 or 2011 or something.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? All right, we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 470. Is that our agenda for the day, Jeff?
Yes.
Would you tell us about then tomorrow?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Tomorrow, we do have a regular Thursday meeting.
Oh.
And the bills on the agenda, bringing back the notification of airport closure bill. The Aviation Department did do a survey of airport owners and got positive responses. There's a couple of amendments, small amendments. The bill that allowed ODOT to use Employment Department records for some of the collection processes will be back for work session. And a pre-Columbia River crossing overview so that you can ask some more questions in preparation for the meeting on Friday so that agency and Columbia River Crossing project staff will be here for that tomorrow. And then, again, Friday, the meeting starting at 11:30. You're all signed up now for the tour and the meeting. And you need to get there on your own. And I'll send information about the best parking place because they'll validate your parking there.
There's a Smart Park garage just kitty corner to
yeah.
the...
Smart Park at NATO Parkway and Davis.
It's on the light rail line.
Right in the corner there.
For those of you who can ride light rail in.
There you go. See, we got train, we got light rail.
And there's an increasing number of senators from Washington coming. I think they're up to about five now, and several are going to join the tour. So.
That's terrific.
Yeah, great. Okay.
Mr. Chair, I need to know who I need to thank for the lovely Valentine cookie.
Your best gal right here.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Atkins.
Valentine, sure.
And if anybody in the members of the House are watching, you can't have this because this would,
be a gift.
It would be a gift. We're adjourned.